Morning. Welcome to Ag Policy This Morning. Just a note that there is some spam available. Hickory Smoke Spam, so good morning spam.
Very good.
That's available, and it will make more sense later when I do my legislative district report. But also artesian well water, so you can help yourself to a bottle of water and some spam, and hopefully there's enough spam for all. But anyway, so welcome to the committee. We are going to talk about the House File 2746 to begin with. And we've got, I'm just going to ask Colby to go through the bill. We do have an amendment, and we're waiting for one more member to come so that we can have a quorum so we can move the amendment. But we're going to go ahead and get, we'll go ahead. I'm going to have Colby go ahead with. So, Colby, if you can explain it with the amendment, that would be helpful.
Madam Chair and members, House File 2746 is the unsession bill for the Department of Agriculture. The amendment would get rid of Article 2, which is summarized in my summary. Article 2 transfers warehouse law enforcement responsibility from the Department of Agriculture to the Department of Commerce, but with the amendment, that article would be removed. So I will summarize the provisions in Article 1 quickly, and if members have questions, please let me know. So Article 1 is titled Technical Changes. The first section is a good example of that. It eliminates an outdated reference to the University of Minnesota. Section 2 eliminates language that requires the Department of Agriculture to implement a value-added agricultural processing and marketing grant program. Section 3 is a section, there are several throughout the bill, that collectively eliminate the non-resident frozen food manufacturer food handler license category. And Section 4, there are also several sections related to elimination of potato grading statutes and apple grading statutes as well. Those would be repealed in the bill. Section 5, again, has to do with the frozen food manufacturer non-resident license elimination. So to Section 6, 7, and Section 8, then, is the technical provision that directs the reviser of statutes to correct any cross-references in statutes or rules to account for the fact that the frozen food manufacturer, potato license or potato grading, and apple grading statutes would be eliminated in the bill. The repealer is Section 9 of Article 1. In my summary, I've provided some detail on each of the repealed sections. I can go through those quickly. Section 17.03 and 17.038 currently direct the Department of Agriculture to collect, compile, and supply ag statistics. Section 17.045 authorizes the Department of Agriculture to investigate food handling complaints. 17.1161 requires the Minnesota Institute for Sustainable Agriculture at the University of Minnesota to establish a framework for participatory problem solving in rural communities. 17.138 requires the department to develop and maintain a list of manure management research and monitoring needs in consultation with certain entities. 17.14 to 17.19 prohibit price discrimination in the purchase of farm products from different sellers in the state. 17.42 to 17.44 create a misdemeanor crime for selling grain treated with toxic chemicals. 17.452 require the department to promote the commercial production of farmed cervidae in the state. Chapter 18 would be eliminated entirely. That's a codification of a multi-state pest control compact. 30.003 to 30.19 regulates the grading and artificial coloring of potatoes. 30.20 authorizes the Department of Agriculture to set inspection fees in relation to potato, apple, and wild rice grading and labeling. Section 30.201 is a misdemeanor crime for violating the potato and apple grading statutes. And again, those would be eliminated in the bill. And that's 30.55 to 30.59. Those are the apple grading statutes, that, and they also require apples sold at retail to be marked with the appropriate grade on the label. 32.104 authorizes local units of government to inspect dairy products within their jurisdiction. 32.411 establishes milk, cream, and fluid milk product standards to promote uniform quality throughout the state and creates a misdemeanor crime for failure to comply. 32.417 establishes a reimbursement program for qualifying investments by dairy operators who produce milk for sale in cans. And 32.57 to 32.59 are the requirements that a person have, a non-resident, obtain a food handler license from the Department of Agriculture if they sell frozen food or frozen dairy products in the state. That's the end of Article 1, and as I mentioned before, the amendment would eliminate all of Article 2 in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. We do have a quorum now, so we will be able to move the amendment. So I'll move that we take the amendment, which does eliminate Article 2. Any discussion about that? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. So we do have somebody from the department here to discuss the bill. If you have questions regarding it, is the in-session bill. Yes. Okay, we have a number of questions. I'm going to start with Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Question for Mr. Sullivan. The Section 2, the elimination of this program, did it have a name, and has it been replaced by something else, or why the elimination of that?
I think we'll bring Mr. Cruz down from the Department of Ag, and he may have others, too, to be able to answer some of those questions.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Sandra Cruz, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I believe, if I'm following along correctly, that Article 2 referring to the warehousing bonding statutes. That was a late decision by the Department of Commerce. Am I correct? I'm seeing a few hands shaking.
Mr. Cruz, it's Article 2 is the Commerce.
Warehouse. Yes, I do have the right one. So
okay, yes.
The bonding of the warehouse was going to be moved to the Department of Commerce. It wasn't really put forward for deletion. That program, we had talked with Commerce months ago about taking over because it's a little bit more like what they do rather than what we do at the Department of Ag. We are not insurance experts, so I don't think we would be considering ourselves even bonding experts. But so we had talked to them about moving the program over there. And when the discussion moved along, they were less receptive to that, so they reached out and asked that currently we leave it where it's at because they weren't sure that they could take on. There are specific reasons for that. You'd have to go to the Department of Commerce, but that was the original idea, was to just shift the bonding and warehousing section to the Department of Commerce because we just thought it was more appropriate.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I apologize. I didn't make myself clear. I'm talking about Article 1, Section 2, the value-added program.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. Mr. Cruz?
And there.
So specifically that question is, there's some elimination of language and...
Madam Chair, I looked in the statute, and there's no name for this program, like... investment grants, whatever. So what has it been used for, and has it been replaced by something else, or is there no need for this anymore?
What is the statute number?
Mr. Cruz. So we're on page 2, section 2.
Okay.
And of... Section 17.101, subdivision 5, is what the statute would be.
It's
So you're referring to Chapter 17.101, Subdivision 5?
Yes.
Okay.
So if there, because we're eliminating what previously was, shall establish and implement a value-added ag product processing and marketing grant program. So I think what Representative Anderson is asking is, what was it called? And right. And is it being replaced? And
I don't have that information in front of me right now. I can certainly get that later today from the department.
All right. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a question to the department. Did we reach out to all the stakeholders? Is there anything in here that's controversial that you know of? Has everybody weighed in on these changes?
That is something
Mr. Pierce.
Madam Chair and Representative, my apologies. That is something I can answer with absolute certainty. We did reach out to everybody on every one of these provisions. Our intention, per Commissioner Frederickson, was to put forth nothing that was supposed to be controversial whatsoever. So we reached out even to the U on our very first one, just eliminating the Department of Agriculture over at the U of M. They said they didn't use that name anymore. We asked them if they were comfortable with that. So, yes, we fully vetted each one of these.
Thank you.
And yes, Representative Hamilton.
And Madam Chair, I believe there's a provision in here that made it mandatory for the Commissioner of Agriculture to go out and catch wild boars, all right, personally. And I'm hoping that's still in, that we didn't eliminate that, because I know Commissioner Frederickson would really enjoy being able to go out and do that. So is that provision in there? Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, I don't believe that provision is in this bill. I've also heard about it publicly, but I don't believe it is in here.
Good, good. We'll leave that one in there. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may,
yes, Mr. Cruz.
Representative Hamilton would not be the first legislator to threaten that would be voted down if we had included it. So we will leave it there for now.
All right. Representative Post.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the repealer, Section 17.42 to 17.44 establishes a misdemeanor crime for selling grain treated with toxic chemicals. I hope that is in law someplace else, because I would hate to think that that's okay to start doing that.
Mr. Cruz.
Madam Chair and Representative, absolutely not. This is redundant to our adulterated foods, our adulterated feed and grain and food statute. So we have broad authority, and it's subsumed within that. Food safety is really not changed one iota in our entire proposal. It's merely getting rid of food safety references living in other places throughout the statute book.
All right. Other questions? Yes, Representative Polk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The hopeful this is someplace else in the bill, too, but repeal of 17.14 to 17.19. Prohibiting price discrimination when purchasing farm products from different sellers. Where is that addressed? Someplace else in law?
Mr. Cruz.
Madam Chair and Representative Falk, yes, it is within our broad authority. Also, my understanding of that particular provision is that it's not actually aimed at the consumer end. It's aimed if there's a complaint with the commissioner's discrimination. And that's handled by Chapter 14 Administrative Procedure Law. And quite frankly, with that, it's a redundant policy. We weren't even sure if you could have that program the way it is right now, because they would be potentially lapsing their time with Chapter 14. So it creates uniformity with how Chapter 14 provisions are supposed to go forward.
Any other questions? No? All right. We do have House File 2746 as amended, and I'll move to refer that to the House floor. So anyone have any other comments? Otherwise, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you. Just before we get to Representative Barrett's bill, if you want to just pass around the plates and napkins and spam, then people can have it here, and then others can come forward and get some as well. Because I don't need to take all of that home with me. And there is the water as well. But Representative Barrett.
Thank you.
you put this together?
No. I did. Welcome to the committee, Representative Barrett.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. And Representative Barrett, Chisago County, here to discuss House File 2178.
Thank you. And you do have an amendment.
We do. We have a delete all amendment.
Okay. So I will move, unless Representative Hamilton would like to, move the amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the, is it the A14 amendment?
Yes.
Move the A14 amendment.
Thank you. So, all right, so all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. So that's what we have before us.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Just to highlight some of the areas of this particular bill, and before I do that, let me just say it's really been a long road, but an interesting road in that a constituent of mine who manages our local farmers market in Chisago City came to me with some ideas for maybe better, well, she actually had a problem with how her farmers market and some of the regulations and rules related to her farmers market. Talking to some of the vendors who are in her farmers market, it sounds like maybe some other vendors had some same issues, and we found out that farmers markets are not defined in law. So we went to the Department of Health and had a good meeting with the Department of Health and Agriculture a little bit more than a year ago. And then we brought in folks from the Minnesota Farmers Market Association. So through the process of over a year, we came to the realization that we could probably define a farmers market in statute and then create some of the statutes and the abilities that the farmers markets want to be able to do in a farmers market. So with that as an introduction, let me just go over the particular parts of the bill. Section number one defines a farmer's market, again, for the first time in state statute. And section two defines product sampling, which the Farmers Market Association felt was important. Section three defines food demonstrations and what we can do to demonstrate food products so that people would be more likely to purchase it at the farmer's market. Section four then provides exceptions in that the Farmers Market Association or a local government could define a farmer's market as they see fit. It has nothing to do with statute, but we wanted comfort language so that those folks would be able to define it a little bit differently. And then section five then talks about what food sampling and demonstration is. Again, talking to the Department of Health over the past year, obviously food safety is of critical concern, so nothing in the statute at all reduces the quality of food or the safety of food products sold or given or sampled to our public. That's a quick summary of the bill. I have a couple folks who would like to testify on the bill, if that's okay. I could answer questions right now if you'd like. Otherwise, we'll go to...
Any initial questions? Yes, Representative Fritz.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Barrett. Thank you for bringing this forward. I think we all have farmers markets in our areas, and I attend them quite often. I'm concerned, you know, about the distribution of the food and the cleanliness. And, you know, I serve on health, finance, and policy, and I'm an old nurse. So I do worry about cross-contamination and those. So I hope you can be more specific to that point.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative.
Sure. Madam Chair and Representative, I'd be happy to. I know the Department of Health is here as well. And for issues like that, because we've met over several times, I attended a couple meetings and our folks here attended many more. Food safety is of critical importance. And so if you don't mind, I'd be happy to bring Department of Health up to answer specifically that question.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Barrett, because I did have a bill with Representative Drazkowski a few years ago for the distribution of food at a church bazaar,
yeah,
and I think we, you know, so we wanted to see where this is similar.
Sure. Okay. So, someone from the Department of Health, if you come forward and state your name for the record.
Linda Prale, Minnesota Department of Health.
April Bogard, Minnesota Department of Health.
Were you able to hear the question?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we were.
You can go ahead.
Sure. Yes, we've been working with the Farmers Market Association, Representative Barrett, other representatives, various cities and counties on this since last February. And it, from the Department of Health's perspective, there's nothing in this bill that would change, for the worse, the food safety provisions that we have in statute and in rule. we are keeping the same level of food safety protection that we have in Minnesota, which is very high. And this just helps the farmers market provide local food at good prices and be able to show people what kind of food they can get and what they can do with it at farmers markets. And April, anything else?
Madam Chair, representatives, in fact, part of this bill clarifies that samplers and vendors at the farmers market have to comply with the rules in the Minnesota Food Code, parts 4626.1855. So it does, in fact, clarify what the requirements are for hand washing and food safety.
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, and then in, I haven't seen that, but I will. So in that area then, do you regulate or investigate or do spot checks of farmers markets like other vendors?
Madam Chair, Representative, the Minnesota Department of Health does inspect certain vendors at farmers markets. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture also may regulate and inspect certain vendors at the farmers markets. So we do have a presence there. We do observe those food handling practices and correct any violations that we find.
And to that point, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. then and to the testifiers, so it would be, I think, beneficial for a person selling at the farmers market to say approved by or the health department. Is there anything in the bill that would give that
testifiers?
No, there's
to them,
Madam Chair, Representative. There's nothing in the bill currently that would allow us to do anything like that. I just wanted to mention too that the Department of Agriculture is here, and the first part of the bill, as I call it, is really their statutory provision. So if you have questions about their food mm-hmm. safety, mm-hmm. I'm sure they'd be happy to come down and answer questions also.
All thank right. you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
I'm looking at line 1.15. It's defining small portion, and it defines it as no more than 3 ounces of food or beverage. And I thought 3 ounces was what you would say is the amount of meat one should eat in a meal. I mean, it seems like a large portion to me.
One of the testifiers?
No more.
Or is that something that Representative Barrett wants to respond to?
I think Representative Barrett and maybe the Department of Agriculture
okay.
would like to respond to that.
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I think in that situation, things are relative. For me, 3 ounces is a very small sample. For you, it might be a larger one. But it would depend on the product. Obviously, 3 ounces for something that's lightweight in general is a large amount. Other things, it wouldn't be a large amount. So we picked a number that seemed relevant and appropriate given what we wanted to accomplish.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I come back to asking, isn't 3 ounces the amount that is generally prescribed for, suggested for an amount of meat that a person should eat in a meal? I mean, it feels, normally when I, and I love the sampling, it's a good bill, but if I have a sample of an apple or a piece of cheese or whatever it is way less than 3 ounces. I can't imagine. That's where I'm stumbling here.
Sure.
It's
okay.
just very large.
All right, Representative Barrett.
Yeah, sure. It does say food or beverage, so 3 ounces would be a quarter of a can of pop, for example. Could it be a sixth of a can of pop? That might be more appropriate. But I think for me it was just a way to define it that couldn't exceed that amount. We could discuss whether it should be 3 or 2 ounces, but it really depends on the particular food or beverage we're referring to so that we can encompass all of them while still understanding that many samples would be far less than that. So it was a way to put in the fold more rather than fewer, so we didn't have any issues with a beverage that might exceed 3 ounces, which again would be a quarter of a can of pop. If the Department of Ag has any better definitions here, I'd be happy to entertain that.
Thank
as well.
Thank you. I think we will have the Department of Ag come down. Representative Hamilton has a question, and that may be for Department of Ag too, or for...
Madam Chair, I've got a few questions here,
okay.
but I think we can address this.
Okay.
However, I was, Madam Chair, I was in a study at the University of Iowa, and it was on all about diet. And Chair Wagenius's question, actually, they were pushing meat protein along with green leaves and or leafy greens and sulfurs and others. So 3 ounces of protein, I exceeded that two or three times. So, yeah. Pardon me?
Good.
Yeah, absolutely. I ate a lot of bacon. It was awesome.
If I could respond to that.
Yes, Representative Wagenius.
That's great for a meal. I was just looking at this. This is a sample. And it's just a wholly different concept and why a sample would be so big. That's
fine we'll,
to have 3 ounces or 6 ounces or whatever you want, but I'm just looking at a sample and it struck me as odd.
Thank you. So to answer the question regarding the sample, Mr. Cruz?
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I might be the wrong person to come down and say that 3 ounces is too much food. That's certainly, I'm a little bit more in Representative Hamilton's camp when it comes to my portion size. But the idea was, as the representative said, to have a broad umbrella, because these are for-profit businesses, and if they want to give away what would, you know, be a full meal to some, that would be on them, and they would be making less business. So it's really a business decision for these individuals. This is to provide a broad tent.
All right. Does that answer the question, or?
It's just, it was just struck me as a...
As a lot.
When we're talking about small portion, this is a meal size for a lot of foods. In fact, for some, 3 ounces of salad, a lot of salad.
Okay. Representative Nornes.
Thank you. I just had a, I guess a comment. I had a young man that called me, a father that called me because his son wants to set up a food stand this summer. And I just for your information, he was looking at setting it up at our interstate road stops, you know, the rest areas. And that apparently is not allowed in the state of Minnesota. So it doesn't define in this bill where these food stands or the farmers markets can be located, and probably it doesn't have to be. But I thought maybe the rest stops might be an area where an entrepreneur could do well if it was legal. But that's a different bill for a different day, I guess.
Thank you. Representative Barrett, did you have any comment or no?
No, I don't think I do, other than we had to define a farmer's market in a certain way. I know that certain local jurisdictions would have a different definition that might include one person who would want to sell their farm or their produce at a particular place, and they could certainly do that. In this definition, I think we have three or more persons who assemble at a defined public location that is open to the public. So it would have to be that person and two others who would qualify under the state definition of a farmer's market.
Representative Hamilton, did you have a question or comment other than?
I do.
Yeah, very good.
All right, thank you. You brought up the Department of Health. Well, first of all, for the Department of Agriculture, I think, are they able to sell live chickens, live animals at these farmers markets? And if so, you know, is there a limitation on how many or anything like that?
If you identify yourself for the record, thank you.
My name is Dr. Heidi Kassenberg. I'm the Division Director of the Dairy and Food Inspection Division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Madam Chair, Representative, live animals are not allowed to be sold at farmers markets because there's health and safety reasons for that.
All right. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Kassenberg, could they sell frozen if it's state-inspected or USDA-inspected processed? Poultry products, if it meets all the requirements as far as if it's frozen, having a freezer truck or whatever the case may be, could that be sold?
Doctor?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, of course, we would encourage that.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe this is for the Department of Health, and it goes on the lines of questioning, I think, from Representative Fritz, and with the hand-washing equipment and whatnot, can you give me an example of what is acceptable or portable hand washing equipment's okay. You know, can you use a bucket with bleach? You know, I guess it, we don't want to make it too prescriptive, if you will, to where, you know, all of a sudden we have a bunch of criminals out there that are just trying to sell their product.
Madam Chair, representatives, the hand washing requirements do allow a range of setups depending on the operation itself, from a portable hand washing station, which would include hot and cold running water under pressure, to what we call gravity-fed setups. So an igloo cooler where you can turn the water on, wash your hands, rinse your hands under that water, the water goes to a catchment bucket underneath is also acceptable.
Representative right. Hamilton.
All right, thank you. Thank you for that. The other question is, and maybe this is to the testifiers for the farmers market themselves, are we having any issues with the fire marshal or anything like that? And the reason I bring that up is I do some work with some dear friends of mine who are Hmong, and they had some issues with the fire marshal coming in because the tents that were set up over the exhibitors wasn't fire retardant and stuff like that, and so they ran into some issues there. Are you having any issues with the fire marshal or anybody coming out there doing inspections?
And welcome to the committee. If you state your name, please.
I'm Kathy Zeman, the operations manager from Minnesota Farmers Market Association. We have not surfaced any of those concerns at the association level. So nothing has come up from all of our farmers markets. However, that's been in the news, and it has affected others that we've heard of in the state. But that's more of an issue at the local level.
Okay. Representative okay. Hamilton.
And Madam Chair and Representative Barrett, thank you for bringing this bill forward. You know, we want to make this as, of course, we all want to make sure that we protect the consumer, right? But also we want to make sure that we allow people to sell their products, you know, and not have so much over-regulation or burden to where it ends up shutting these down. So I think clarification is good. And if you have issues with, I think most of the departments have been very, very receptive. And working with the Department of Agriculture, I know individuals there, they've worked with us if we've had issues in the past just to help us through those. But if there's ever issues where it's a hang-up, I would say, please give Representative Barrett or any one of us a call, and we'd be happy to work with you and the departments or, you know, the regulating bodies, because we want to make sure that we continue promoting these markets. So, thank you.
Representative Barrett.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hamilton. And just for the record, we met again over a year ago and continued to meet, and we've had nothing but really good dialogue, good feedback, good constructive ideas, good collaboration from many, many units, including Farmers Union has been involved in this, Department of Health, Department of Ag, City of Minneapolis, who I believe might be testifying in a couple minutes. So really it's a cross-section of Minnesota and ideas and regulations for that matter. And so it's really been a good process.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And thank you, too, Representative, for the bill. Just had a question on the definition of farmers market. You on page one, you call it the association of three or more, but on page two, you kind of open that back up again by saying an association or a government could establish its own definition. And kind of picking up on what the Representative Nornes mentioned, could an association be one person, or with that opening up, what is the significance of having an exact definition of farmers market?
Sure, thank you.
Representative Barrett.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's a very good question. Again, I mentioned that we had a collaboration of people meeting, talking about this, Farmers Union, Health, Ag, and City of Minneapolis. City of Minneapolis, as we all know, I think has a really good reputation for establishing farmers market, a farmers market, and multiple farmers markets throughout the neighborhoods, really an attempt to add to the economic value of farmers markets and the people, and allowing people to get out on a Saturday morning or whatever day of the week and enjoy a farmers market. So they, in particular, have a different definition for a farmers market, and we are conscious of that. And it seemed to be working pretty well in Minneapolis, so we wanted to make sure that they would continue to be able to do that. If City of Minneapolis might want to come down and just expand on that, that would to better answer your question.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Can you state your name for the record, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Daniel Huff. I'm the Director of Environmental Health for the Minneapolis Health Department.
Did you hear the question from Representative Anderson?
Yes, Representative. Okay. We in Minneapolis, as Representative Barrett stated, have a number of different types of farmers markets to meet different needs. And one of our types of farmers markets is really to address food deserts within our city. We have areas where it is more difficult to buy fresh produce. We want farmers to be able to come in, provide fresh produce to our residents, and these may only have one or two vendors at a farmer's market. My church hosts one, for example. And because of just market factors, they're not able to have more than one or two vendors sustained. So this allows us in Minneapolis to call that a farmer's market and not be in conflict with state law.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, Representative Fritz.
Well, just, Madam Chair, I'm curious about it. Is there a charge? Can anyone just set up a card table and join a farmer's market and bring their produce? Or how does one get to be involved and sell at a farmer's market?
Thank you. I think we can have, I know that Representative Barrett has two testifiers that probably want to speak. And they may be able to answer that if they're connected to the Farmers Market Association. So again, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, representatives, currently there is no statute that... Pardon?
Did you state your name?
Earlier, Kathy Zeman, sorry. There's no statute that currently is required to establish a farmer's market. It is really from the business side that you establish a farmer's market. It requires you to be a legal entity so you can anchor your checking account and then to get your insurance. And then we have the broad guidelines and, of course, our certification course that we train people on the food safety and the regulations and the rules for farmers markets. That's how you would start a farmers market.
Thank you. And I think it's regarding participation in a farmers market. So you're starting the association or the farmers market, but if you want to participate individually.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yes, all farmers markets have rules, bylaws, regulations. And in that case, if you want to join a farmers market, you go to that farmers market manager and you acquire their rules and regulations and you follow what they're... And every farmers market will be different.
All right. Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. And sorry to belabor the point, but I think what Representative Fritz might have been getting at was there may be some comfort language from just calling it a farmer's market, and could a person put up their card table along the roadside and hang a shingle that says farmer's market and be basically unregulated, but still call it a farmer's market?
Representative Barrett.
Sure. Madam Chair and Representative, again, the definition for this purpose for state statute requires three or more people. So in this situation, for this bill, we need... our attempt was to not have that happen, understanding that locally, as Minneapolis just testified to, they have a reason to define a farmer's market as one or more people, depending on the purpose of the farmer's market. So for this purpose, three or more people.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thanks again. So is the word itself or the phrase itself basically trademarked or patented so a single person couldn't do that under your bill?
Representative Barrett.
Let me try to answer that in a maybe a slightly different way.
And the Department of Ag is standing behind you in case that...
Are they chomping? If they're chomping on the bit,
in case
I will
they're going to be helpful.
Phone my friend behind me.
If they're going to be helpful, you might want to bring them forward. And Mr. Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. So I think what's coming out of the record today is that the farmers market bill and language clearly has a lot of overlay, and what you're pointing out is a very valid concern: is are we trademarking the term farmers market and preventing others from using it? That was part of our discussions that Representative Barrett facilitated as early as this week on some of that very point, and we thank him for that. We really reached a point of clarity with the stakeholders that from the Department of Ag's perspective, we're worried about food safety, and that's the hat we wore when addressing this definition. We wanted to make sure that we were fair to the emerging markets of farmers markets, but at the same time, we didn't create an issue where you couldn't use the word farmers market out front because you weren't three or more or something like that. So your concern goes more to, in my opinion, a zoning question. So that would be more of the purview of the local regulator, the city. And you heard Minneapolis talk about that. And there you get more into the branding, in the sense where if you want to be called a Minneapolis farmers market, their most general term, as I understand it, is that you, one, you need to be zoned, you need to be licensed, and you have to think 60% needs to be grown within a certain amount of mileage from Minneapolis to be called a farmers market. So there they're getting into both branding and into zoning. And so these there's some tension between these, but I don't think they're in conflict. What we want to do is to make sure that the farmers markets, wherever they are, whether they be through an association, and that's why we have that language about that they can be more strict, because we're not trying to infringe on anybody's freedom of association. If an association like Kathy's would come forward and say, you have to have 100% to be called one of our farmers markets, we wouldn't be there saying, well, no, by statute, they're okay so long as they do this. So we're really trying to retreat from the issues of zoning and branding and just make it a food safety issue.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to point out also that I know in my community they have an association, but they also have members who don't choose to be part of, are not choosing to be part of that association. So, but the community then also has a standard by which they have to apply. They can't just go to a corner in the community and set up a farmer's market or their sell their corn or whatever. They have to actually get permission from the community. The only way I'd see it was at freestanding is I've seen sometimes in the country where somebody will be selling raspberries or something and they'll do it on the corner off of a field, which they've gotten permission for, and then they'll do that type of sale. So that would be away from either one of those. But I would assume that you wouldn't need to regulate that. You know what you're buying at that point. When you go, you're buying somebody's individual food and you're making that choice. It would be, I suppose it would be similar to going to a dairy farm and purchasing milk. You are going and purchasing something that you're aware of.
Mm-hmm. Seeing no questions right now, do you have the other testifiers you wanted to bring up or other people? I think one of the farmers market people hasn't spoken yet, and they may have prepared statements, so we'll have them come forward.
Madam Chair and representatives, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today regarding the Minnesota Farmers Market Association Farmers Market Bill. My name is Cecilia Coulter, and I'm a board director of the Minnesota Farmers Market Association. I'm also a founder and market manager of the Chisago City Farmers Market in Chisago County, a longtime vendor at various Minnesota farmers markets, and Hispanic constituent of Representative Baird's district. Community members and I joined 2 years ago to establish the Chisago City Farmers Market. We wanted to bring fresh local food to our part of the world, but also teach our customers how best to use the wide variety of fruits and vegetables that some of our customers were seeing for the first time at our market. We soon faced significant hurdles, as we have alluded to this morning, as we planned cooking demonstrations and sampling, especially sampling and of value-added products. We sat down many times over the last year and a half with representatives from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, Department of Health, Minneapolis Department of Health, Allstate Local Health Departments, and the Minnesota Farmers Union to try to figure out how best to conduct these activities safely and easily accomplish sampling and food demonstrations at our farmers market. Again, after many conversations, it was apparent that current policies governing these activities did not fit today's farmers market model. I then contacted my state representative, Barrett, who, together with members of the several agencies I alluded to, helped craft the bill that is before this committee today. This bill is significantly important as it will enable all Minnesota farmers markets, including those in outstate Minnesota, to conduct food sampling and cooking demonstrations without the regulatory hurdles current policies require, but while closely following the existing food code to ensure food safety for our public. The Minnesota Farmers Market Association is indebted to the Minnesota Department of Health, Agriculture, the Minneapolis Health Department, and Outstate Health Departments, and the Minnesota Farmers Union for their guidance these past months in crafting this bill. Our mission, the Minnesota Farmers Market Association's mission, is to provide services and programs that support and promote farmers markets in Minnesota. Support for this bill fits our mission. In addition, the Minnesota Farmers Market Association will ensure through our certification course that market managers are educated in safe food sampling and cooking demonstrations. We will ensure that training takes place so that markets will comply with the Minnesota Food Code. This is also part of our mission, the MFMA's mission. I am here then to encourage support for this bill, which I know will benefit all Minnesota farmers markets by promoting activities such as sampling and food demonstrations that have the power of transforming our farmers markets into vibrant community events and thereby transform our communities, offering viable economic outlets for our small local farmers and creating community hubs for residents and tourists, all while promoting and supporting local economies. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you. And Ms. Zeman, did you have more comments?
You know, in the interest of time, Madam Chair, it's up to you, but we know we have a couple other folks that would like to talk about the issue, so it's up to you.
Thank you. I think we can move on. We have Martha Archer that's on the list. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, Representatives, and thank you, Representative Barrett, for championing this. I am Martha Archer, Executive Director of Mill City Farmers Market. And as everyone has said, we've worked long and hard to propose this bill and make sure it is inclusive of health concerns as well as the concerns of all the markets in the state and the local farmers and food artisans. Our mission is to inspire and nurture a healthy community, and we do this through education. Equally important to us is supporting the economic opportunities for local farmers and food artisans in this community. Farmers markets have the unique opportunity to teach using a thriving community event to bring a wide audience of people face-to-face together with healthy foods. It's experiential learning at its best. Customers experience the sights, sounds, smells, and tastes of local agriculture and sustainable agriculture, and they're inspired to eat healthy foods. So the changes proposed in this, allowing the food demonstrations, are crucial to the economic growth for these local food artisans and farmers, as well as to the health of our community. So I thank you for your support.
Thank you. Any questions? Otherwise, I believe, again, Minneapolis Department of Health, did you want to speak again? You've answered your questions. Okay. And are there people in the audience that wanted to comment or address anything? All right. Seeing no other questions here from the committee members, Representative Hamilton.
Are the testifiers done?
I believe they are.
And then I have, I would like to visit, I guess, after this with either Department of Health and Dr. Kassenborg and maybe Mr. Sullivan on discussing products of the farm. And the reason I bring that up is my question as it related to live, you know, whether it's poultry and others, I'd just like to have a little more dialogue on that. And one of the things that I think we're missing on this in this debate is the cultural diversity. And we've done some work, like I said, I've done some work with various ethnic groups here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and there's some things, whether it's spiritual-based, religious, or whatever the case may be, on some of the products that they want to both sell and purchase at the farmers markets. And I don't want to be to exclude individuals as well. Again, I thank you very much for bringing this forward, and the testifiers here as well. But I also want to visit with the various departments to make sure that we're not excluding people. You know, let's make sure that we're embracing the cultural differences that are out there, and do it in a way again that protects health and consumer safety and everything as well. But if we can have a few of those conversations offline here, that'd be great. Thank you.
All right. Any closing comments, Representative Barrett?
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the dialogue, the discussion. Again, I just want to compliment all the people that were involved in this, from our local farmers market to the Department of Health, Ag, Farmers Union, Minneapolis Farmers Markets. Over a year of discussion, and we've I think come up with a really good bill, and would appreciate your support.
Having thorough discussion is greatly appreciated. I think it's good in the committee and also good prior to when you bring the bill forward. So thank you for that. And seeing no further questions or comments, Representative Hamilton will renew his motion to move House File 2178 as amended, refer it to the floor. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you. And we have the opportunity today to hear two legislative reports, and I'm going to actually start with Representative Petersburg, because
he's going to set the bar high, Madam Chair.
I know he's going to, and then but I'm also hoping he takes a long time. Yes, Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, since our last meeting, I guess was televised, we've had some requests statewide for people that really enjoyed watching these mini presentations. Yours was great. And asked if ones they had missed had been archived so they could watch all of them. So I just was going to ask you.
That's a good question. I'm not sure that we're usually on video. We're usually not. So it would have been nice probably for each of us to, then YouTube it and be able to... Yes, we can start over. Representative Anderson, since you did it first, we could start over again. That would be good. Very good. You know what? While we're waiting, just a moment, we do have a couple of...
really enjoyed.
We have some minutes that, if we can move the minutes, Wednesday, March 5th, and Thursday, March 6th. So, Representative Erickson, would you... care to move those minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Thank you. Motion prevails. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Can everybody hear me all right? I've got, first of all, an invitation. Down in Owatonna, we have our Farm and Power Show coming up this weekend at Steele County Fairgrounds. If you haven't been to the Steele County Fair, you also got to make that this summer as well. It is the best fair short of the state fair. And in the state, and it's also free. So come on down, but it's a large opportunity. But Farm and Power Show is coming this weekend down there, and it's a big deal down there as well. Before I get started with the rest, we had our breakfast, and for those of you that know Owatonna, you know that we also have a third generation cafe down there called Costa's. It's a Greek restaurant, but they also do handmade candies, and so I have that for dessert that I'm going to pass around. There are three kinds there. There is caramel, and then there are orange cream filled and cherry cream filled, and I'll turn over here. So,
do you think this is going to get beyond me?
Well, I think you have a lot of people you have talked to, but I know Chair Bobby, and I'm sure Representative Fritz is very much familiar with Costa's candy. So the handouts that I gave you are actually just more of the information in regards to the two different counties that I represent. I represent two townships in Waseca and the city of Waseca, and five townships in Steele County and the city of Owatonna. So I only represent part of both of those counties, but we're kind of an average agricultural county in regards to that. Both counties are the same size. Down in southern Minnesota, they all tend to be fairly similar, 432 square miles.
The population density is quite different, though, between the two counties. Waseca is about a little bit more than half of the density that Steele County is. Steele County is at 85 people per square mile, whereas Waseca is 45. Our median income down there is a little bit less than the state average, with Waseca's being at a little over 50,000, and but Steele County is 54,000, which is just under the state level of 55,000. Just some of the things in that sheet that you'll notice is that Waseca County is seventh in the state for hog production. We have a lot of hog farmers down in that area. Steele County is a little bit bigger in regards to vegetables, both vegetables and sweet corn. Canning factories in both Owatonna and Waseca, so we have a lot of sweet corn. You may have remembered that for a while, Owatonna was one of the larger producers of asparagus. They moved their asparagus production down to Texas. They get a few more crops out of there. But Owatonna also not only does sweet corn and peas, they also do green beans and pumpkin. And so there are a lot of that growing in the Steele County as well. I thought I would just talk a little bit about the two cities of Waseca and Owatonna. In regards to Waseca, there's a lot of agricultural base there. First of all, we have one of, I believe, five experiment farms, agricultural farms, or I guess they're considered farms, experimental farms, that the University of Minnesota has. With that, early on, right next to it, there used to be what they called the Waseca Agricultural School. It was a high school for kids that could be actually a boarding school in which they would learn about agriculture and develop it. And they, because of the experiment farm, they had hands-on experience. Shortly after that, it became a University of Minnesota branch, in which there's actually a school down there for the University of Minnesota. I think short-sightedly, for budget reasons, that University of Minnesota branch was eliminated and sold to the federal government, and it is now a federal prison. And I think the fact that we really want to promote outstate agriculture, it was probably something that we felt wasn't the best use of facilities, but financially short-term, it was the best. A couple other things in regards to Waseca. It's home of to E.F. Johnson in the 60s and 70s. Was a major producer of CB radios and that type of equipment. So it was very, very big. It has branched out. There's now a company that branched out from there called iTron. They are probably one of the leaders in meter readers, the ones where now utilities, gas line meters and so forth can just drive down the middle of the street and they get the meter reading sent to them radio-wise, and they can record that. It saves a lot of time. Brown Printing is another large company there, and at one time, just a few years ago, it was still ranked as the largest post office in the state of Minnesota because of the volume that it actually shipped out. It actually has a post office branch there, and semis come up because they produce magazines, catalogs, a lot of things at Brown Printing in Waseca. So there's still a lot of stuff going out of there. Now, we also have in Waseca a train switching yard for the East and West. It was Northern Pacific, and now it's Canadian Pacific, I believe, company there as well. A little bit interesting side fact about the history about Waseca. The city of Waseca was originally not going to be the county seat. It is currently. My understanding from reading the history books back in the late 1800s, the county seat and the records were all down in a township called Wilton. And in the middle of the night, somebody came in and stole all the county records and moved them to Waseca, where they stayed, and that's how it became the county seat. So, you know, some of that stuff happens along the same way. Switching over to Owatonna. By the way, some of you may or may not know how Owatonna got its name. Owatonna is actually named after Indian princess. And the story goes that this Indian princess had been sick, ailing for a long time. and had heard about mineral springs in the Old Town area that had healing powers. And so her father sent her and some Braves to that area where she recuperated over the summer and was healed, accordingly to the history, by those healing waters. And her name was Princess Owatonna. And so that's how the town got its name, and that's how they used it. Owatonna was also the home of one of three state orphanages in the state. And so we have a state school there that, and history about a lot of people that have grew up their childhood as orphans in there. And it was typical of a lot of things you've seen on movies and other things. Yet people that have come from there, and we have a lot in that area that were raised in the orphanage, say that there were also good things about it. So there's a lot of history there in regards to the state school. In regards to agriculture, we also are very well versed in industry there as well. I'd like to talk a little bit about a couple of the agricultural based things there in Owatonna. One of them is Bushel Boy, and for those of you that know what that is, they do fine ripened tomatoes year round, even in winter climates, because it's a hydroponic plant, and so they grow their tomatoes without dirt. They experimented with lettuce, but I believe they discontinued that line because it just wasn't as profitable. So sometime you want to take a tour of that, that's an interesting tour also. We also have a sod farm down there that is a fairly large sod farm, Nagel Farms, that is just outside my district, actually represented Prince's District of Medford, Fairwell area, but it is something that is well known in that area also. We have milk producers, NPI, etc. Manufacturing for farm equipment was also very big in Owatonna area. It was home to OMC originally, that then became Mustang, and then got sold to a German company that is now left of the area. But they built the flight elevators that you used to see were the primary use for moving hay bales up into the hay mow was the elevator, as well as a feed mill. They really specialized in that. I actually worked for them for a year that summer. Gandy's is another company that produces fertilizer and insecticide application equipment for tillage equipment, planters, and so forth, and they still are growing. The largest employer in Owatonna right now is Federated, in which they have started out really dealing with farm insurance and liability property insurance, but expanded more. I think today they are 11th in the United States in size for assets as a mutual insurance company. At one time we had 5 implement dealers, and we have now down to just 1, John Deere. Ag Power, which is a large facility, just built a new facility outside of Owatonna. It's a huge area for repair and replacement, but we've lost implement dealers like, for those of you that own equipment, Minneapolis Moline, Oliver, Massey Ferguson, all of those have kind of disappeared from us as well. Some of the other larger employers in town are Jostens. Those of you that may have class rings most likely came from Jostens. They were very big. Owatonna was the home plant and the home office of Jostens. Viracon, which makes a lot of glass and really puts together the thermal panes and insulated glass, as well as a lot of the reflective glass, has had a lot of contracts with some of the casinos in Las Vegas, and even some of the glass here in Minneapolis-St. Paul and the skyscrapers probably came from Viracon. OTC started out as a specialty tool company that made special tools for car repair and other things, along with Truth Tool. So with that, I hope you're all enjoying the candy. It's good. It's good quality stuff, isn't it? Any questions about my area?
Anybody have any questions? Yes, Representative Anderson.
You also have a Cabela's down there, right?
Oh, yes.
Sure.
It was the first Cabela's in Minnesota, and it took a little bit of an angling. It needed to have sewer system and so forth, and being annexed into the
the city, and a farmer sold a 20-foot area so that he could connect the properties in order to get the annex into the city of Owatonna in order to get that down. But it was the first village in the state. It's right next to the airport, so we have a lot of people fly in for their supplies to begin with, and then they would fly out to Canada or whatever. So it's a nice place, and it has, of course, the animals, stuffed animals and so forth in it. So if you haven't been down there, come on down there. It's not very far from the Capitol. It's less than an hour away. So.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Petersburg, and thank you for the Costas candy.
I'm just curious as far as, are they manufactured in your district?
No,
or
but
I know what a Zamboni is. I know what it is.
Zamboni goes with Martin Zeller. Martin Zeller is a product of Boston.
Okay.
If you know the Gear Daddies or right. Martin Zeller in the Hard Ways, he's a singer, songwriter, and he wrote the Zamboni song.
Mm. Okay.
I want to ride a Zamboni.
Yes.
So,
what did
you say?
Did you say some stretching?
There's been a stretching, maybe, but I have those, yes.
Do you have yaks?
Bingo! You can have an extra piece of yak.
What was it?
Yaks. I was trying to find Y words. We have a YMCA, but we don't have yaks. So, good work, Representative Nornes. Ethan actually said Oslo, and I said, guess what? In Vernon Township of Dodge County, Oslo. I represent both Oslo and London in my district. So London's in Freeborn County, and I have one township in Freeborn, one township in Dodge County. The one county I don't have in Maurer County is Udolpho Township, so I have that as a U. But of Maurer County, because as they redistricted, they had to have contiguous area, and so they cut out the Udolpho Township. So Representative Savick has that part. So I used to have it, but I don't anymore. I'm not going to go piece by piece here, but agriculture is big in Maurer County in our district. Number 9 in the state for agriculture. We have a new Bellisio Foods, which is the is a Michelin pizza, or they have come in. We used to have an Austin packaging company, and they have bought the Austin packaging company, so they're doing a lot of dried package foods. We're number 4 in corn, number 7 in crops. We do have restaurants in our community. Eastside Lake, we're one of those few counties, Maurer County is, that doesn't have a natural lake. Eastside Lake is our lake, but it's a man-made lake in Austin. We've suffered through a number of floods in our area. And for those of you who've been around a while, you've probably heard that many times, because we have come to the state and received money to do flood mitigation, flood buyout, property buyout. But right now we're in the midst of actually doing a fairly substantive kind of building of flood walls and berms, and so it's really hit now that it's more on the main street of town, where before it was kind of more on the outside and you wouldn't necessarily have seen it, but now we're doing some work right in town. So that's big. We have, I put under I.J. Holton. I.J. Holton was a former president and CEO of Hormel Foods. And I.J. Holton, we now have a new intermediate school that's named after I.J. Holton. And we are one of the few cities and places in the state probably that are able to build new schools because we have population growth. And I.J. Holton Intermediate School is very much a very technologically advanced school. The kids all have iPads, and I just met with the school last week, and the one thing they talked about was the fact that they, even though everything is wireless, they had to actually put in some wires for some of their rooms in order to be able to secure testing when they do academic testing. But otherwise, it's fairly wireless, and the kids, the library, it's a fantastic library in the I.J. Holton School, but it's not filled with books. It's filled with technology. So it's a very unique, it does have books in it, but it's very much, you know, when you think about a new school and building that, it's much smaller. We have related businesses to agriculture. Obviously, our number one big business is Hormel Foods. And Hormel Foods is a homegrown. The George Hormel came to Austin in 1891, began the production. They had a cut and kill. They used to do beef, and they used to have other animals as well. Now it's just a hog operation. Quality Pork Processors does the kill for Hormel Foods, but it is just a huge, unique fan there. So it is the home, it is Bamtown, USA. It is where they do that. But they obviously they need to buy a lot of hogs, and so they purchase hogs from the area and from many, many, many farmers.
Do they still have the carving contest for spam?
You know, they don't in Austin anyway. They used to have a spam fest, the spam jam, and they don't do spam jam anymore. The spam jam was really a very fun day because they had a lot of, you'd go there and everything was spam. I mean, all the food stands were spam. So you could have spam shish kebabs and spam burgers, of course, which are really good. But even deep-fried spam, you know, and other kinds of things. And now if you go to the state fair, you can get spam. Now if you're really dying for that tasty treat. But and I don't work for Hormel. I don't. I'm not. So don't get me wrong. I do like it. But
how many hogs a day do they process? Someone told me upwards of 20,000.
Yes.
How many
are you going to
load on
a
truck?
That's a good question.
On a truck?
On a truck.
How many are
there? Not quite 200, but 200 do the math.
Do the math. Like, lots of trucks coming
in. There's a lot of trucks.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a deal. Do they get hogs from Sioux Falls? There's a butchering plant there.
They get hogs from a number of, I think, likely do. They get hogs from a great number of farmers throughout
right.
the area. Obviously, we're on the border with Iowa, so we have Minnesota,
Iowa,
Wisconsin, South Dakota, Nebraska, through the area. Yes.
Isn't it true that one state in the United States gets more spam than any other state?
There is, and someday if we had the budget, we would all go and visit that state.
Yeah, exactly.
We have to get in there.
I appreciate that.
Because that state is Hawaii. They love spam. So that's actually, we don't have a spam jam anymore in Austin, Minnesota. But if you want to go to Hawaii, they do have a spam jam there. So.
Why did they like it in Hawaii?
It's easy. I mean, it's in a can. You know, it's
so everything.
Why Hawaii? It'd be just as easy as Washington.
I think it's probably
good with pineapple.
It's very Polynesian in regards to a lot of ham and pork and stuff that's used for some of their luau's and stuff like that. It's just popular for some reason.
Yeah, I think it also has something to do with their inability to get fresh food there, and so since it's canned, they can get it there easier.
Spice
Tam.
Spice Tam, good word.
Will I get another piece? All right.
Absolutely. And it was, spam was developed in 1937. because and they weren't the first company to actually do it. There were other companies that were doing canned ham and other things, but it really became really critical in World War II because it was an easy hay ration, you know, so that it was nutritious and protein and able to be carried by all of the soldiers, and it really did save the Russian army, actually, in World War II because of spam. Let's see, anything else? We do have the National Barrel Show. So the National Barrel Show is held in Austin at our fairgrounds. So people from all over come to that. Notable people, I'll talk about the notable people. John Chapin, when I'm with John Chapin. Mark knows because John Chapin is a golfer. And he grew up in Austin, but he's been a PGA golfer, done well. John Madden.
Really?
Heard that name, John Madden?
Yeah.
John Madden? Yeah.
I know that one, right?
He's an announcer. The big John Madden from NFL football. He was born in Austin, Minnesota. He does not fly, but he has been to Austin. He has driven in
his bus.
Big bus. So he's in there.
Did he go to high school there, or when did he leave?
No, he was fairly young, actually, when he left.
Happy
but
days?
Really?
Let's see.
Marion or whatever?
Marion Ross.
Marion Ross.
Marion Ross is from Albert Lee.
Oh. Close.
Yes.
How about that fine community college called Riverland?
Riverland Community College is a very fine community college. I work at Riverland Community College, so of course I can say that. We do have Riverland Community College has a very strong farm business management program, so that can get back to agriculture. We do have that. And so we're in southern Minnesota for, you know, we compete maybe, not necessarily, but we work with South Central
That's
College.
Right. We work together.
Because they also have a strong farm business management program.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I think, do you know Judy Lundy from Life, Mill Creek Life Sciences? She actually had a lab at the Mayo Clinic, and I just heard that they moved that towards the Hormel Institute.
Okay.
And it's absolutely amazing. I toured that whole thing when it was over at the Mayo, and they can take spent plasma, put a concoction on it, and all of a sudden the cells will start beating, and they'll come together and beat like as a heart, and can grow parts. And I think they just moved into Austin.
They could have.
I believe so. Yeah.
We do have under you is the University of Minnesota Hormel Institute, and that is an institute that's not, it's got the name Hormel or Hormel because it is from, originally came from the family, and Jay Hormel had kind of these, actually horse barns that he wanted to do something, and so they took the horse barns and they started doing some scientific research and other things, and they were big in lipid research, and now they're very much known as they want to be the world-renowned cancer research center, and it's all regarding food. So they don't do, you know, the spam research or the pepperoni research. They do food, though, and other things to talk about how can we prevent cancer. And usually it's good things like ginger and green tea and dark chocolate. I mean, there are some, you know, they're doing research on a variety of food to look at, okay, what can we ingest that will help our bodies not to be the creator of cancer in our bodies. So, but the University of Minnesota Hormel Institute has grown, and this next year we're going to add, thanks to all of you who voted on the bond they mailed, $13.5 million came from the state with a match from the Hormel Foundation, $13.5 million. So we will have that expansion, and that's that is why we're bringing in more Mayo Clinic. Scientists are coming, and we will be growing even more. So it's an exciting place. And if you do come to Austin, you need to, you know, you can go to the Hormel Institute. You can see that. But you can also go to the Spam Museum, which then you can purchase your very own hickory smoked spam. But and they have other really good spam there that you don't necessarily get. We had some Hy-Vee people in my office yesterday. I said, my Hy-Vee, I can get a variety of spam. But in most places, you probably can't. So you have to come to the Spam Museum. But again, I don't work for Hormel Foods, and I'm not.
I don't believe that.
Make that very clear. And just that that's becoming the well-known. Yes.
Just a question. Do they also make canned bacon? Because years ago I remember buying canned bacon.
Yeah, kind of the round.
Yeah.
They do have Canadian bacon, I think. Mm. Probably.
Which is great for camping and stuff because you don't have to refrigerate it.
No, they have pig's feet and they have, you know, they have all sorts of things. So all they
makes your mouth water, doesn't it?
Yes, that does. But we have, oh, and the other thing I wanted to talk about was the artesian water, because the two things I brought today were the Spam and the artesian water. We have an artesian well. And in Leroy, Minnesota, which is further south and east of Austin, that's where they found the water underneath, the more than 400 feet in the ground. And so the artesian water comes from there. It doesn't, it's not impacted by the environment or people because it actually is brought up from the well and it's packaged right there, bottled right there. And so it's very good and healthy and, you know, they found something in the ground. So again, I think we just, you know, I like my district. I like southern Minnesota. We also have a lot of bike trails, and so if people are interested in coming, it's fairly flat land, so it's not too difficult to, you know, take a bike ride on the trail. And anybody, any other questions? Yes.
I have a constituent. He's very old. He used to be the chief, the head hog buyer for that company. He lives in Toynbee, Minnesota. His name is Carl Coonery. And he insists that most people mispronounce the name of the company because he says that his pronunciation is correct and it's not Hormel, it's Hormel.
Thank you, because even for me, as I've been saying it two different ways.
Yeah.
Hormel is the family name.
Right.
Hormel is their way of, you know, getting the market, you know, out there to do some publicity around the name. It just sounded a little bit fancier, and so they really put the accent on the Hormel. But Hormel is, so I'm not a native Austinian, so you can tell that because people that are and are older generation or originally from Austin will call it Hormel. And if they worked at Hormel's, you know, that's, they worked at Hormel's.
Yeah.
But now, for the most part, people do call it Hormel. And it did change over the years, too. It was the George A. Hormel Company, and then it's now Hormel or Hormel Foods Corporation. So.
We just changed. It's Ethan Vogel.
Vogel. There we go. We got Ethan Vogel. All right. Anybody else? Okay. Tomorrow, Patty Fritz is doing hers, and then we'll go Andrew Fall. David Dill?
I only have a few cows.
Fritz is on for tomorrow, and
I'll see what I can put together.
Representative Bill.
You what?
Let's see. But thank you.
Thank you very much.
I have a few more pieces of candy here if you want some for later.
Oh, I will take some of that. All right, meeting adjourned.